Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. We hope everybody is dry. Boy, what a lot of rain we've reached, or should I say we've had. It's reached record heights of rain all across the Midwest, and a little sunshine today was greatly appreciated, and we hope everybody else is drying out, and our hearts are out to the folks down the southeast that had such a horrible spring with the tornadoes and the terrible weather, and only hope the best for them and our listeners down in that part of the country. Our guest in a little bit, Bernie Gawlings, all the way from Pennsylvania. We're going to be talking Alaskan fishing, and it should be a great show. So if you're a fisherman and you've ever thought about heading way up north, you want to stick around tonight. It's going to be a great show with Bernie Gawlings from Pennsylvania and talking Alaskan fishing in his fantastic lodge, the Rocky River Lodge up in Alaska. As always, manning his responsibilities over in Indianapolis, the Honorable Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
Nice to have you along tonight, as always.
Well, thank you. It's nice for inviting me to be part of this wild world situation we got going on here.
Absolutely. Also, remind myself that handling the technical responsibilities, Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson from Ohio, and of course our musical director, Jim Johnson. And Dr. Day, how's everything in the massive Wild World Studios in Indianapolis?
Well, good for now. Even though we had a nice day, we've got rain on the way again.
I've heard that.
For no reason at all.
Yes, I've heard that. And we had 30-degree weather, and as many of our listeners know, that last week, because we had such a nice warm break and we were heading into the month of May, I let all the alligators go outside for their summer jaunt, and they looked at me quite angry this morning when it was 35 degrees outside. But I wasn't
probably the same as the tree frogs they chased out of their little pond.
Yeah, I think so. But it gets that cold in Florida. I mean, they did just fine. They just get down. The water keeps the temperature longer, so basically the water's warmer than the atmosphere, so they were fine. They just weren't very happy with me. That's all I can say. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and yours truly, Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. Now, before you head out to any of our natural coastlines, I want you to listen to these first two stories tonight. If you want to head out to the beach for a midnight rendezvous, you're going to have to call ahead of time. Now, we're going off to North Carolina, where off-road vehicles are banned from the beaches from 10 o'clock to 6 a.m. through November 15th to protect the rare sea turtles that nest on the beach. Now, the loggerhead, leatherback, and green turtles typically lay their eggs at night from May to September. Now, all the way down to Georgia, the Department of Natural Resources says an endangered leatherback turtle is the first turtle to nest on the Georgia beach for the second consecutive year. The mother leatherback opened the state's sea turtle nesting season April 19th on Osawa Island. Now, the smaller, more common loggerheads usually begin nesting from May 1st to the 15th each time this year, any day up. So before you head out, you better check and see, because the beaches will be closed from 10 to 6 a.m.
To four-wheel drive, ATV-type vehicles.
Yes, everything.
Good. That's outstanding news. Too bad they can't close my neighbor's yard with their races they have every once in a while.
Yeah, see, well. Oh, now there's box turtles probably nesting over there. Maybe
that's
should...
right. I'm going to start a petition.
That's right. Well, let's head off to God's country.
Oh, Colorado?
Colorado, that's right. Now, you've got a couple of big black bears that live with you, and they are ex-educators. They don't go out and do the school shows anymore, right?
Right.
Well, help me out with this next story. We're heading off to Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Two men say a marauding bear or bears stole a half a dozen birds from their chicken coops. Now, Peter Kinley says a bear broke into his coop April 28th, stole one chicken, and injured another. Now, Cedar Beauregard, says that a bear destroyed a coop a few days before that and ate five chickens. Does this sound like a bear?
Well, it doesn't make any sense why he would kill and eat one chicken and leave the other one, because bears, you know, if the food's there, they just stick around. But then again, destroying of the chicken coop does sound very bear-like, so it's hard to say, you know. My bears are
confused.
Too lazy. They would never do that much work, so. I mean,
right.
I tell the old story about, you know, people think bears will eat anything and everything. And one year my wife made these wonderful chicken and noodles that she thought were not so wonderful. And I said, well, the bears would eat them. And guess what? They wouldn't touch it either. So I didn't tell her that, though. I told her that they loved them. Okay, doctor.
All right. Well, we're heading back to Georgia for this story, but I wanted to ask you. Now, you've got a cute little olive baboon named Elizabeth.
Yes.
That helps you do the weeding and helps you with work around the yard. Now, does she like bugs?
Yeah, she likes to examine bugs. She's very interested in bugs. She likes to dismember them. Some types she'll eat. Some she just likes to dissect.
Well, it's that time of the year again. The noisy 13-year cicadas are back for the first time since 1998.
Ooh.
Now, these members of the periodical cicada brood 19 have been underground. Now, during the next few months, they're going to perch in the treetops, make a lot of music, and babies. Now, cicadas with orange eyeballs are harmless and to people and plants. But, you know, normally we have the cicadas with the black eyeballs, but
right.
This year we're going to get some orange ones.
Yeah. And is that going to happen here, too?
We had the orange cicadas 2 years ago.
Right, okay. I'll tell you what, the volume is unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
If you haven't experienced that before, it is unbelievable, the amount of noise all those insects will make. So my heart is out to those folks.
All right, now I need a little help with this story. We're heading off to Los Angeles, California. Now, it costs $100 a day to feed Big Guy, a 750-pound blind sea lion that has been living at Southern California's Marine Mammal Care Center for the last 15 months. Now, here's why we need a little help. If the center can't find him a new home or continue to feed him, he'll have to be euthanized.
Oh, that's not good.
That's not good, no. So, Los Angeles, California, Big Guy needs a little help, okay?
So what? Well, they just need money? Is that what's involved?
Cost $100 a day to feed him.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's someone in California that would well be responsible enough to do that, so I'm sure they'll find someone.
That's why we're reporting.
That's
all right. Now, as we reported earlier, the cicadas are back. Well, for the last several months, we've been reporting on the white-nose syndrome with the bats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all across the United States, the white nose syndrome has destroyed a lot of bats. We're down to, like, we've lost like 75% of the bat population due to this disease. And as we reported, if you see bats moving into your house, your attic, you know, anywhere along your eaves, please let them stay. We need them.
Yes.
It's going to be a banner year for the bugs. The bugs, this is their year.
Yes, it is.
All right. Springfield, Illinois, the Illinois Soybean Association is sponsoring a statewide survey of the stink bug, which has been spotted in the central part of the state. The invasive insect is fond of eating young soybean pods. Now, the University of Illinois Extension entomologist Phil Nixon suggests using a vacuum cleaner to remove them from your plants or your home or whatever. And it's going to be a good year for bugs.
You know, that's
so
a pretty good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea, using the vacuum cleaner.
Yep, you'll just end up with a stinky vacuum cleaner.
Oh, no, it'll go right to the bag. You throw the bag away.
Yeah. Oh, and okay, it might just work.
Yeah, it just might.
All right, we're going to go back to North Carolina again. Now, a gorilla at the North Carolina Zoo is pregnant. 11-year-old Jemani is more than 5 months pregnant and is due between July 23rd and August 27th. The father is 19-year-old Nashi. Now, this is the second time in the zoo's history that a gorilla has been pregnant there. They must be doing something right.
They must be. Spring is in the air.
Now, in Idaho, the Fish and Game is sending trailers emblazoned with the statement, "Take me fishing." Now, why is that? Well, I think it's because the old Farmer's Almanac says the next 2 weeks is the best time for fishing. Well, they got it under control there in Idaho. Now, the Take Me Fishing program is taking off across the state and is kicking off the fishing season. The trailers are stocked with fishing tackle, and they'll be traveling the ponds across Idaho for special events where anglers can check out fish equipment and bait for free. Now, a schedule of events is available on the agency's website, fishlandgame.idaho.gov. Now, what a great idea.
Yeah, that is a good idea. In fact, one of our underwriters, Peter Weimer, they have the iKids Fishing, and which gets kids interested in going fishing. They've got a website and all that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But anything to get the kids outdoors nowadays. And what a
That's
great
right.
sport
well,
fishing.
The next 2 weeks is the best for fishing, so get out there.
Okay,
all right,
I will.
To finish up the Wild World News tonight, what animal do you think makes the largest sound on Earth?
My hand's up.
Okay, Mr. Batson, what is it?
Blue whale.
Blue whale, you are correct.
Oh, thank you.
Now, the call of the whale reaches levels up to 188 decibels. Now, if you're underwater, this extraordinary loud whistle can be heard for hundreds of miles. So if you're about to fall asleep and you hear a noise and it wakes you up,
yes,
you're underwater.
Oh, God.
Well, that's the Wild World News for tonight.
Oh, another admirable job by Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, our other writers, such as the iKidsFishing.com, is the iKids Fishing Show in the USA, starting kids, teaching kids and you and how to catch fish. With over 40 million fishermen in the USA today spending more than $45 billion a year in retail sales, the iKids Fishing Show is a keeper for your kids. It's available now on DVD, and a preview can be seen at iKidsFishing.com website. Soon we are all hopeful it will be available on iTunes, created by the same folks at We Want You Cottages in Western New York, the Weimers, who brought you MeltTheTalkingMuskie.com, a preschool, second grade sight word learning tool which has had success with autistic children. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. On the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park, we do call that God's country. Go to their website at info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Way up north, way up north, north to Alaska, to go north for us is home. North to Alaska, to go north for us is home.
Heading north, everybody, going up to Alaska. I know everybody's thinking about planning that big summer extravaganza. All the way from his estate in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, our good friend, old friend, I should say, Bernie Galling. Good evening, Bernie.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I think if I can get through the show, I've been dealing with this little flu bug and everything. But besides that, what the heck? How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, it's great to hear
good
your
to
voice.
Hear from you. Good to talk with you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm telling you, I said we've been friends now, I bet, close to 20 years. It's hard to believe. Time just flies by so quickly.
Yeah, it's been that long, hasn't it?
It has been that long. I want to tell everybody that we salute Bernie Galling. He is a retired Air Force veteran. Also, we should salute him for being a retired Pittsburgh police officer for how many years?
I took a vested retirement out of the police department and went into the fishing business. I had a bigger calling. After knowing Larry Batson and wanting to get into the wild world, you know, fishing seemed to be the place to be. So I hung up the gun belt and went north, first to Canada, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got rid of that, and now I'm in Alaska.
Well, your first lodge. Now, I have to explain to everybody that you were, we met at the outdoor shows. I know a lot of people are familiar with these. They're all across the country where you can go in the months of January, February, March, and checking out the latest fishing gear and all the lodges and camps and fishing pros and turkey pros, and all these folks are there, and they draw these huge crowds, and Bernie would always be at the shows. And I guess over dinner one night, you decided to get a lodge in Saskatchewan. Is that kind of putting things simply?
Something like that. You know, I had, I was working the Cleveland show, and there was an old friend there who actually had a lodge in Alaska, and he had sort of a dismal look on his face. And I said, Les, I says, what's wrong? He says, I think I just got too many years in doing this. He says, I need to sell it. I says, really? I says, well, why would you want to do that? You have to have the best life out there of all. And he says, well, you're right. He says, you know, I do, but he said, like everything, there's a time, you know, to walk away. And I says, well, do you want much for it? And he started chuckling, and he says, now, come on. He says, you don't want to go to Alaska. And I said, why not? So, you know, one thing led to another thing, and I came very, very close to buying that lodge, and it put the bug in me. And then I had another friend who at the time had owned a lodge in Saskatchewan. His name was Brian Sims. He operated Reindeer Lake Lodge. And he said, you know, there's a lodge up in my neighborhood that's for sale, and you should go look at it. And I said, well, I don't want to go to Saskatchewan. I want to go to Alaska. He said, look, a lodge is a lodge, and if you're in the business, he says, it really don't matter where you are. Just, you know, jump in with both feet and enjoy the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
So about a year and a half later, there I was, Saskatchewan, trying to evade the mosquitoes and the black flies and everything like that. And I had a marriage there of 7 years before I finally left. And then I went to Alaska, and I'm still there today.
That's beautiful country, isn't it?
Alaska or Saskatchewan?
No, well, either one, especially Alaska.
Well, they're two totally different geographical areas. You know, Saskatchewan, the Canadians refer to that as the prairies. It's flat, and it's nothing but grain and sunflowers, soybeans, and, you know, just as far as you can see, it's flat. It's like Indiana, you know.
Oh.
And then you go to Alaska, and my goodness, you go from sea level to over 20,000 feet to, you know what North America's biggest mountain is, don't you, Larry?
My hand's up. Mount McKinley?
Bingo.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's quite a diverse geographical area there, you know. It's really different. And it's gorgeous. It is. I call it America's playground. You know, there's so much land there that, and unsettled land. And actually, another little trivia thing, did you know that the federal government owns 65% of the land in Alaska?
Really?
Really.
Wow.
Between state parks, state forests, BLM land, 65%.
Hmm.
So for the person that wants to go and explore and not trespass, what a better place.
It's still kind of the Wild West, isn't it?
Oh, you betcha. I mean, for sure. I mean, it is the state of a two-lane highway. The only four-lane road is a little bit around Anchorage. And it's been probably about 15 years since I've been up to Fairbanks. I don't know if they ever had a four-lane system in or not, or maybe a little bit around Juneau, the capital. But other than that, you know, when you get into what I call mainstream Alaska, Anchorage, where probably a good part of the state's population, you know, if you would take, a couple hundred-mile circle around Anchorage, that's probably most of those state residing right there. But well, that's it, two-lane highway and a lot of dirt roads.
What was your first thoughts when you went to Alaska for the very first time? When you had a chance to, what, did you go on a fishing trip or something? Or
yeah, but I don't remember because I was born up there, so that was the very first time I was there.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
No, so actually, I go home every year.
Oh wow! Well, that now I've learned something tonight. So that's basically your homeland.
Basically, you know, it's funny, you know, I don't know what the ratio is, but I think if you would look at the population of Alaska and take the people over 35 and the people under 35, I would be willing to bet that it's a very high percentage of the people over 35 are what they call transplants.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people that move to Alaska. So, you know, I go up there and, oh, everybody knows I'm from Pennsylvania, and they chide me a little bit. And the people that kind of been there a long time, they actually think they're real Alaskans. But deep down inside, they're truly a transplant. But I get chided a little bit, and then I got to say, well, I'm from the class of 51, Anchorage. So that kind of puts them down a little bit.
Well, that's kind of like, it's almost like Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, in Arizona, the same way with the snowbirds, right? So, but every state, I guess, like that has its own little cliche of people. But you know, the first time I went back that I can remember was in the middle 70s. And I had been stationed in Idaho, and I come back to Pittsburgh, and me and my young son went up to Alaska with a bunch of other guys on a fishing trip. And you want to talk about getting the bug, you looked at the river, and especially during the sockeye season, when the sockeyes first come in the salt water, they're silver.
Oh, that's the sockeye salmon.
They take on their spawning colors, and they turn bright red. They're the ones that you always see the grizzly bears grabbing in midair, and they got the orange, the green heads. And so there you are, you know, this water is crystal clear, and you see all these orange fish or red fish, and you're like, my goodness, look at this. This is like a thought trout pond. And there are. There's just, I mean, that's not when you really want to catch the fish. You know, that's the tourist that catches the sockeye salmon when they're red. You know, you really want to catch them when they're silver. And that's true with any species. You want to try to harvest them before they get into their spawning stage and their body composition starts changing and breaking down. And I mean, if you're going to go to Alaska, you want prime wild Alaskan salmon. At least I do. It's just, I go back every year and I'm just in awe. You know, I always have to stand there for just, it seems like an endless amount of time, just gazing and looking, and I mean, can't get enough of it.
We call Colorado God's country, but I think that even falls true with Alaska, if not more so.
Yeah, probably.
I've never been.
You need to go.
I know. I've been told that many times. It's so you have your lodge in Alaska now. Tell my listeners around the world exactly where it is at, and what's involved getting there, and so forth.
Well, I am located in central Alaska, which is commonly known by Anchorage, which is the biggest city in Alaska. It's not the capital, but it is the biggest city in Alaska. And probably a third of the population lives in that central part of Alaska. And I fish in an area referred to as Port Graham. And it's considered part of central Alaska, but it's on the very tip of the southern central coast. And Homer, Alaska, which gets advertised a lot as the halibut capital of the world, when we go into the lodge, we drive down to Homer from Anchorage, and then we take an airplane, and we fly. It's about a 20-minute flight on a Cessna, about 30 miles. And we land in the native community of Port Graham, and I have vehicles there that I had to barge over. And then we got about, it's only 26 miles because of the road systems and everything. You know, you can't go very fast, and going up over the mountain passes, it's about an hour and a half to an hour and 45-minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
We're back in the wilderness, and I'll tell you, it's as wild as anywhere you could ever want to be. The only thing that lets you know you have some civilization is the roar of the diesel generator. That's it. You know, and you can walk out of the cabins, and there's a bear standing there. You can walk between the cabins and be face to face with a lynx, and you know, you can walk down the road and see a mink. You know, you can look up at a tree and see an eagle going over. I mean, it's just it's spectacular.
It's going to stay that way for a long time, isn't it?
A lot of it is because of the lack of road systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in a lot of wildernesses, you know, man is probably wilderness's worst enemy in one way, and in another way, you know, we're its best friend. And I'm all for keeping wilderness areas and national parks and all of this stuff just like they are. I mean, the developers just can't have it all. They can't.
No.
You know, we need the trees for oxygen, and we need this for that and that for this. And by golly, if we take away all of this wilderness, and what are we going to have left to admire?
That's right.
I mean, so, but anyways, you know, Port Graham is itself is a small native community. It's probably home to about, maybe 150 to 175 people in the summer when the kids are out of school. You know, the college kids come back home. The guys take a break from up on the slopes. And then in the winter months, it might fall down to, I understand, somewhere around 100 to 125 people. And they used to have a hatchery and a cannery there that they've operated, but has since fallen on hard times. And so there's not much industry there. You know, most of the the men, they leave and go to work on the slopes, which is really Prudhoe Bay, where the pipeline starts, the northernmost tip of Alaska. And so, you know, they'll work a couple weeks at the slopes, a couple weeks back, a couple weeks out, a couple weeks back, and everybody's happy. I mean, it's just, it's a great place. So,
we're talking.
Going back, I enjoy seeing the people.
I'll bet, I'll bet. We're talking to Bernie Galling all the way from his home in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but we're talking Alaska tonight, everybody. We're going to take a short break. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat. Oh, boy, a kitty cat. Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat Heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World and his magical and premium network known as Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be back in just a few moments with Bernie Galling all the way from Pennsylvania. We're talking Alaskan fishing, everybody, so for all the fishermen out there, and we have a bunch. If you're serious, stick around. We're having a fun time and a fun hour. We also want to tell everyone, we want to thank RadioMom.fm, the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Also, Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with their wild animal ambassadors. Call them at 317-243-0700. And also Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. Fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website at www.santeecoopercountry.org. We also want to tell everyone next week on the program, we're going to have some wacky fun, everybody. For the fans of the old Three Stooges, we're going to have a Three Stooges historian, also a local television personality here in the central Indiana area, Hal Fryer, and to his beloved TV fans, he's known as Harlow Hickenlooper. It's going to be wacky, everybody, but we're going to be talking about Larry, Curly, and Moe next week on Larry Batson's Wild World. And we've got some great shows planned for the next couple of months, so be sure that you keep us on your schedule. And also, don't forget, if you go to the Blog Talk site, you can listen to any show from the past in the archives. Download that show absolutely free of charge, including tonight's, right after our broadcast. It's available for immediate download. And we've had listeners all across the country listen to it on iPods, burn them to CDs. We love it. Hope you do that. Enjoy each show because we've had some fantastic guests tonight, no exception. From his home in Pennsylvania, up past his bedtime a little bit, we're told, Bernie Galling. Now, Bernie, if I was planning on one of these trips, what do I need to get ready to go? Let's say me and three buddies off to Alaska to go fishing at the Rocky River Lodge.
Well, Larry, the first thing from my experience is you have to get your wife's permission.
That helps. That's the
answer. No, really. You know, a trip to Alaska is not going to your local stream for the day, or maybe like in Pennsylvania, going up to a northern camp for the weekend. I mean, there's a lot involved. You know, airfare is expensive, and most often to go beyond the major cities in Alaska is multiple flights. And, you know, when you have multiple flights, there's considerable cost. And for most of us people, it's something that might be the trip of a lifetime. It might be something that we do once and we get hooked and, you know, we save for it and we do it again 5 years later and or 10 years later. But, you know, to get ready for a trip like that, you know, you want to think gear. I think there's a lot of lodges in Alaska that will outfit you with your fishing gear.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have to bring your terminal tackle, such as lures, spinners, flies, boots, things like that, rain gear. But there's really not a whole lot as far as getting ready. You know, it's just like I give my guests a good packing list. I tell them what to bring, you know.
Is there a limit to what they can bring?
Well, all airlines have a 50-pound weight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a good list, you know, one that you start with early and say, well, can I eliminate this? Can I eliminate this? And, you know, I tell the guys that they don't need a pair of jeans every day or they don't need something every day. You know, there's, you know, no one's here for a beauty or handsome contest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do have a washer and dryer, even though we're in the wilderness, if it would come to that. You know, we get every once in a while somebody falls in or slips, and, you know, we got to get clothes dried. So packing is a big thing, you know. And I like to say the gear. Some guys want to use their own gear. Other guys are happy to use lodge gear. Understanding what you're fishing for. I mean, in Alaska, we have 5 species of salmon, and I think for the most part, most fishermen think salmon, and that's it. Well, the fact is that there's 5 different species. They all spawn at a different time. Some of them do overlap, and they all have different feeding habits. And they do go from the pink salmon, which might be all a 3-pound or 4-pound fish, up to a king salmon, which I think the state record is 97 pounds. So there's a big spread there. So when you're bringing your own tackle, you have to know what species of salmon is in season. You know,
mm-hmm.
Is it that spawn on? You know, traditionally, salmon are not a fish that live in the fresh water like a rainbow trout or a brown trout or a smallmouth bass or something like that. You know, they are saltwater fish. They're spawned in the fresh water. You know, the following spring they go out to sea and they live to be 2 to 5 years old. And whenever the call to return goes off in their head, you know, they come back up and they go back into the fresh water and that's when you want to be there catching them, when they first come out of that salt water. You know, the closer you are to the ocean, the fresher the fish are going to be. And there's places in Alaska where these salmon will spawn inland 100 miles. And it might take them, you know, 4, 5, 7 days to get to where they're actually going to spawn. And then it's their mating. I mean, it's funny, you know, when you see fish that actually court each other, you know, and you watch them in the water, and it's kind of neat, you know. And so you have to know what your species is, and what you need to be successful. And I think having a good outfitter on the first trip, you go up, is a good education, especially if you get hooked. I know there's a lot of people that go to different parts of Alaska on their own, and I would say a good many of them started by going to a lodge, and they just liked it so much, they just go back every year, and, you know, not everyone can afford the services of a lodge, and they try to do it on their own, and some are successful and some aren't, so... getting ready is a real important part.
Now, knowing what you know now, if you had a particular time of the year, when would you go to Alaska?
Well, that's sort of a loaded question because, again, it's all about if you're going fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going fishing, it's going to be all about species. My favorite species is the silver salmon. A lot of people... in the lower 48, they recognize it as a coho salmon.
Yeah.
That's generally an August and September fish for most of the state's river systems. There are some places where it will come in late July, but for the most part, it's an August and September fish. It's very acrobatic. They'll go anywhere from 10 to 25 pounds.
Wow.
And what an incredible fish. I mean, especially on a fly rod or not ultra light, but light tackle. I mean, it's wild. I mean, that drag just stings like the manufacturer meant it to be, and that silver salmon will put it to the ultimate test. And as far as table fare, you know, the silver salmon ranks right up there at the top. If I were going to Alaska to be strictly, you know, Mike and Shirley tourist, I would probably go from July 15th to August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by then, a lot of the state flowers are in bloom. It's just a wonderful time to be in the state. I mean, anything and everything you could ever want to do, I don't care if it's going out into one of the bays and seeing a glacier, or going up on an airplane and sightseeing, or going on a gold panning tour or whatever. Just, I mean, you could have a great time there. So July and August are certainly the two most probably traveled months of the year there. And, you know, the one thing that people don't recognize about Alaska is that Alaska's a lot like London and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And you never know when it's going to come. So if you're going to be in the outdoors, take a good rain jacket.
And there probably is nothing better than when you caught that salmon and prepare it almost right on the spot.
Well, yeah, you're right. But, you know, when I was in Canada, that was a big thing of the day, doing a shore lunch and everything
mm-hmm.
like that. But in Alaska, on the rivers...
Oh,
there's
yeah.
generally a lot of company.
Yeah,
and
they're
thinking. Called bears. And I don't care whether you're in strictly a black bear region or if you're in a brown bear region.
Yeah.
The bears find food primarily through their nose.
Yes.
And secondly, they have a great memory.
Uh-huh.
You know, when a park ranger or somebody says, "Don't feed the bears," don't feed the bears.
Yeah.
I mean, because they will come back every day. And the first day you shut them off, they're not nice anymore. So the last thing you want to take down in the river in Alaska, for the most part, is a frying pan. So, because they don't understand, you know, you're not welcome. You know, you're not part of the dinner party. You know.
We won't serve you.
Yeah, and you know, a beer's I never really thought I could love beers as much as I really, really do. To see them down in the river in their natural state, I mean, they're just incredible. It's almost like having a big puppy dog.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, I've had them slump over a log and just look at your fish. You know, I've had a sow come flying down the hill like a freight train, snapping her jaws at you because she thinks you're too close to her cubs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just totally unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
So no, there's no cooking on the on the rivers. I do have an occasional guy though that when they, I do have the occasional adventurous guy that, you know, when they do harvest a salmon, they think it's fitting to take a handful of the roe and gulp it down.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I love sushi. I think I'm an incredible, you know, amateur sushi chef, but I don't eat raw eggs.
Well, no.
I haven't got that far yet.
That just doesn't.
But a lot of guys do it, you know, and I great, good for you, you know.
Yeah, so. Really. So of all the years that you've been up in Alaska and you've had lots and lots of people that have used your services, is there one that stand out, how should I put this, as the most unprepared or wackiest group that you've ever had?
Oh, boy.
There's probably more than one.
No, you know, I want to tell you, I think a lot of that is predicated by the type of operation you run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more professional you are, I think the more the people enjoy what's there in the camp, you know, from the breakfast to the service to the dinner to the fishing to the guides to the staff. And, you know, quite frankly, I fire the big diesel generator up at 5:15 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and there's guys sitting in the dining room before the coffee's even done. And
Lord
so they're up that early.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you know, on the East Coast, you know, the fishermen are 4 hours behind Alaska time. So, like, right now it's only, you know, 6-something in Alaska.
Yeah.
So that time zone really they battle that for the first 3 or 4 days. So, you know, they're wide awake at 6 o'clock in the morning because it's 10 o'clock on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And come 9 o'clock at night, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning in the East Coast. So, truthfully, I'll tell you, I would say that 80% of my people are ready for bed at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And when you're on the river all day,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't use boats. It's traditional fishing with waders and a spinning rod or a fly rod. It's fishing at its best. When you're walking all day, catching fish all day, I mean, it's tiring.
I'll bet. And,
you know, the first 2 days, you're like a brand new Energizer battery.
Yeah. But
by day five, you're about ready to be replaced. So the guys are, 9 o'clock, they're in bed. I mean, so there's not much chance for them to get wacky. You know, most guys, not most guys, but there's a lot of guys that can handle a six-pack, and they get up there and, you know, they bring a case of beer in, and they never even finish it.
Really?
You know, just they're in bed. I mean, so it's tiring.
It's tiring to have
that. It can be a lot of work, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I see more than anything are the stories. You know, the guys come back at night and, you know, especially when there's a couple ladies in the camp and they outfish their significant others, that's just a hoot. And you know, the guys, that's their male ego can't handle that.
No.
And I'll tell you, the reason why the girls are better fishermen than men
mm-hmm.
is because they take instruction very well. They listen. And us men, we know it all.
Yeah.
So for all you guys, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
listen to your guide. And you know, wacky, I mean.
Yeah, right. I can see that. I can see. And like our good friend Bob Jackson from Yellowstone, he says the bear is kind of an equalizer. When you know the bear's out there, I mean, he kind of humbles everyone.
And he's right.
Yeah.
He is definitely right.
And
I got so many bear stories from being chased to,
well, tell us,
you know,
one, Ernie. Tell us one of your best
when
bear
I,
stories.
Probably my best story was when I was in Saskatchewan. You know, we had a lakeside, we called it the gazebo, but it was actually a small building all enclosed with glass. You looked out across the lake, and I heard the girls screaming. You know, it was like 10:30 in the morning, and, you know, they're doing their chores, housekeeping, you know, cooking, all this stuff. And I hear all this screaming. I think, what's going on? And I come out of this gazebo like a fireman, you know, going to fight a fire. And here comes this bear between two of the buildings. And I see his mange up, and he looks at me. And for no reason at all, he just comes at me like a freight train. And, you know, you want to talk about tennis shoes in motion. I was back in that gazebo and pulled that door shut, and the bear had almost had the seat of my pants.
Oh, man.
And for 30 minutes, that bear walked around that gazebo. And I was just afraid, like, he was going to come through the glass.
Oh, I'll bet.
And when he was at one end, I was at the other end. When he was at one end, I was at the other end. I mean, just incredible. And their strength. Another bear story. You know, one night, one of the guys wakes me up and says, Bernie, there's a bear in the kitchen. Oh, and for an outfitter in the wilderness, that's just like, that's your house is on fire. When you have a bear inside a building, it's just total destruction. So, get a flashlight, and I sneak around the building, and I peek in, and I see this bear is all covered in flour and everything. I'm like, oh, man. So, we kind of beat on the building a little bit, thought maybe he'd run out the window where he came in, and he's just not going out. So, somebody in the group come up with the idea of, well, let's start the generator, and because we leave the lights on in the buildings, you know, when the generator goes off at nighttime, so you start the generator in the morning, you're not fumbling in the dark for a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay. So one of the boys go back and fire up the generator, and I'm watching this bear at the flashlight, and as soon as I threw the switch, this bear, I'd say this building was probably 60 feet long.
Yeah.
This bear come down the center of this building, and it was a metal door that opened inwards.
Yeah.
Okay? A metal frame. That bear hit that door so hard, he actually pushed it outwards and flattened door frame and all.
Oh, my Lord.
That's how powerful they are.
Oh, I know.
I mean, yeah, they just, leave the animals be. That's my motto.
Well, that's a good motto to have. I mean, and I'm sure it's in the back of everyone's mind when they're up in that. I know our technical producer, Melissa Hovey, has a great respect and we'll just say a great respect for bears. And whenever I have people that are going out west, that's the first thing they always ask is, what do we do with bears? I've always told them, now, what do you think of this idea, Bernie? You know, these little air horns that you can buy for boats or whatever, about the size of a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
And the bear, because what people don't realize, bears don't see that well. They can't see far distances. So, you know, the bear gets within the vicinity, a couple toots on that are, I don't know how many decibels they are, but it's pretty loud. And my experience is the black bears are really essentially big chickens. A lot of noise or ruckus or stuff, they'll usually head the other way. Are you agreeing with me?
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the best things you can do in the wilderness is go buy yourself an ankle, you know, a bell for your ankle or or on your wrist, and, you know, just play a little bit of music as you're walking. And the only downside of that is you probably won't see any wildlife at all. But then again,
right?
You know, it's a safe trip.
You won't.
I don't think that's really necessary. I think as for being around as many beers as I've been, I think that you just respect them. You know, when you see them, don't try steering them down. Just give them a little bit of room. If there's cubs, you know,
give them a lot of
100 feet. Give the bear the room. Just leave them finish eating and doing what they're doing. And you know, most often when a young cub sees you, you know, you're that way, and, you know, they're gone anyways. So you know, we've been fortunate. We only had one beer incident, and it turned out all right. And, you know, just give them room, and I think you'll be fine.
So do you get recognize your bear neighbors, the different bears?
You know, black bears, they get these little traits. You know, they get a little white star in their chest, or they get a little blotch of this, or a browner nose in the other one, or they get a color tip on their ears of some sort or whatever. And, you know, and normally they're a little territorial, you know. So when you're in this part of the river, you know, you'll see this bear every day, and you're part of this river, you'll see this bear every day. And, you know, every year it seems like we have the same ones that hang around the camp. And, you know, I can tell you the biggest no-no in the world is you don't feed wild animals.
That's right.
You're asking for punishment. I mean, no matter how hungry they look, don't feed them. We take our garbage and we burn it every night, and we take our organic food scraps, you know, that left over from meals and stuff like that, and we put it in 5-gallon buckets, and we drive it a long ways from the camp and dispose of it.
Yeah.
You know, with their noses, they're going to find it. I don't care whether you bury it, you burn it, I don't care what you do with it, they will find it. So, you know, a clean camp is a safe camp.
And that's very true. And, you know, I've said that in the national parks, that people can pollute previous visitors just by throwing even a candy wrapper will attract a bear. You know, and people, they just don't, and they are so smart. I had a good friend who's a bear trainer, and he told me that he thought the bears were as smart as the great apes, except they didn't have the facial expressions.
That's probably true.
We have a bear. I have one bear named Buck, and we've got this huge horse trough that we fill with water for him to get in and drink and so forth. And one day he had it turned over, and I went to get the hose, and I hollered at him. I said, "Hey, Buck," I said, "turn that trough back over so I can fill it up with water." So I go around the corner, and I come back like 5 minutes later. He had it turned over. He was sitting in it. He was ready for the hose so he could take his daily shower. And they're phenomenal, the intelligence of these animals. And as smart as they are, as strong as they are, for as few things that really do happen in a while, it's almost shows you in perspective that they're not as dangerous as people think that they are if they're treated with respect.
I agree with you.
And there should be a place, not only in Alaska, but all over the country for these animals, that we should learn to live and coexist with these animals. Bernie, tell everybody how to get a hold of you. Tell your website and so forth, and make that trip up to Alaska.
Well, I have a great website, and
it is
very simple. It's just our name, RockyRiverLodge.com. And everything you would need to know, where we are, what type of fish we fish for, where we're located, equipment, how we fish, is all on the website. And if that don't answer your questions, right from the site, my toll-free number is there, as well as my email address. And drop me a line and say hi.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm threatening you right now. One day I'm going to call you and say, "I'm coming to Alaska."
Oh, that will be a welcome trip. I'm going
to
have the video cameras ready. I'm going to video that. Larry Batson fishing. This ought to be.
You
Larry, that's when you might have to go from audio to video.
I'm quite the fisherman, though, Bernie Gulling.
Yeah. This ain't your trout pond now, Larry.
I know. I've heard that guys' arms would ache for hours after they've been fishing for the day because they've reeled in so many fish, they get into those salmon and in some parts of the halibut and all that, too. So it's like, no, but I'm threatening you right now one day. I'm gonna call you up and say, I'm coming up and enjoy the hospitality and the facilities of Bernie Gulling up at Rocky River Lodge. Bernie, it's been
a fantastic hour. Camp,
huh?
Yeah, great. I was just going to say our camp worker's 157 salmon in one day, and we had another guy that caught a 350-pound halibut. So there's two challenges ready for you when you get there.
Well, I'm ready, absolutely. Well, it's been a fantastic hour, Bernie. Gosh, we really appreciate you taking your time. I know it's past your bedtime.
Oh, it is.
And it's always great to talk to you. I tell you what we'll do. We'll do this again after the season is over because I know there'll be some great stories come out of Alaska and your lodge and everything. And, gosh, we hope just the best. We hope everybody decides to go fishing in Alaska and use your services. Because, folks, I'm going to tell you right now, he's a great guy. You'll have a fun time, and I know it's all first class, and everybody needs to go to Alaska at least once in their lifetime.
Amen. I agree with that.
Henry Day,
you know what? Just real quick before you go, you know what the Alaska State flower is, right?
What is that?
Forget me not.
I won't believe me.
All right, buddy.
We want to thank Dr. Henry Day. Good job, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you, Bernie. Great show. And he's not going without me.
And also, big thank you to Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. Next week on the show, Hal Fryer, also known as Harlow Hickenlooper. We're talking Three Stooges. It should be a wacky hour. This is Larry Batson. Have a great week, everybody. And you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.